Welcome to the weekly Front Stretch podcast brought to you by FrontStretch.com. I am your host, Dustin Albino, and today I am joined by my colleagues, Zach Tanzaretti and one of Front Stretch's longest tenured writers in its history, Phil Alloway, who are both here to help me break down the crazy weekend in Kansas last week. But first, I want to talk to you guys about DraftKings. As the NASCAR world is in the quest toward Homestead, there are plenty of opportunities to jump in on the action with DraftKings. On DraftKings, the objective is simple. You pick six drivers, watch how they perform on Sunday, and if you choose correctly, you can be eligible for massive cash prizes. All you have to do to jump in on the action is sign up through the Front Stretch Podcast article page, make a $5 deposit, and you'll be eligible for a free entry into one of this weekend's contests at Martinsville Speedway. Once again, DraftKings, where you choose, you play, and you win. Now guys, Martin Truex Jr. picked up his seventh victory of the season this past week at Kansas, and now sits 52 points above the cutoff spot, and the round of 8 hasn't even started yet. However, it was yet another one of the mile-and-a-half victories, just his sixth this season. So Zach, I'm going to start with you. Can we consider the 78 team, and this is probably a dumb question, but do we consider them the king of the mile-and-a-halves?
Oh yeah, for sure. I think as we've been looking at the stats, you know, it's the most mile-and-a-half wins ever in a season. He surpassed Carl Edwards doing it this past weekend, so absolutely for sure. I know everyone's putting his name on the boards for Texas in a few weeks, but yeah, when it comes to those tracks, you know, he just has it down. That entire team has it down, and even tracks like Charlotte, when it didn't look like they were going to win, they end up coming out and still getting it. They're able to overcome those issues, and that was something that we saw them not be able to do in the summer for a few races, but they're now able to overcome some issues. So, man, a seventh win of the season, I mean, that's the most we've seen, tied for the most since 2010, and that's half his career. Yeah. That's half of his career has come this season, so absolutely remarkable.
Phil, what about you?
In all honesty, this is the seventh win this year. This is probably the most impressive of the bunch.
I agree.
A couple of these races, he's just been running away from people. Kentucky's a big example of that. Yeah, that race ended with a GWC, but he had a 14-second lead before the GWC occurred. And that almost never happened. He stays outside of around the green flag stops.
And yeah, a GWC to clear up with maybe some of the new listeners, green-white checkered finish.
Right. I never bought into the whole overtime. So, the GWC it's just stuck with me for the last 20 plus years. So,
yeah.
Now, with Truex's form on intermediate tracks, it's not just Truex, it's really the majority of the top Toyotas that are really, really strong there. Truex has the advantage of having Cole Pirn in his corner, and it appears that he's come up with a few crafty, not a cheat, but a real crafty setup that just really fits Truex, and he can use it to his best ability.
Yeah, and when you look at the mile and a half this year, he is dominated. I mean, even the races that he hasn't won, he's led at Las Vegas the first mile and a half of the year. He led 150 laps. At Texas, he finished eighth but led 49. And then you go down to Kansas, the first Kansas race, he led 104-1. Charlotte, the Coke 600, led 233 laps before finishing third. All these laps led. Kentucky led 152. I mean, you go down the list and it's insane how many laps he's led strictly on mile and a halves. But if you look at the season in whole, I mean, he's led 2,068 laps this year. If you look at his first year with Furniture Row, and Zach, we hit upon this a couple weeks ago, he led one lap the whole year.
Yeah, just after a while, you thought, I know at this point in the season, I realized I was seeing something really, really special. Like 2015 was cool to see him make the Final Four, and last year he was so quick. This every year has been better and better. But now he's able to get a whole bunch of wins that we knew that they've been able to accomplish. Like he can easily have, you know, 30 wins the last, you know, three seasons, but there's so many have slipped through. So at this point, 7 wins, I mean, he's getting at some really, really high numbers win-wise, and we're seeing something special here.
Yeah, and Phil, like you said, you think this is probably the most impressive of the bunch this year because of what he overcame. I mean, he won the pole on, when was it, Friday. But then he had a restart violation in the first stage for going under the white line, which seemed kind of bizarre. And then he had a loose wheel in the second stage. So he went laps down twice in that race and still came back to win.
It was only once. He was able to do his pass-through penalty
right.
after that restart and stayed on the lead lap, and then he got bailed out when Brett Moffitt crashed.
Right, but he was still, you know, and then there was a cautionary after that, but he was still seconds behind. So he overcame adversity twice in that race. And Phil, I'm going to start with you. Would you consider this the best race the team has had maybe all season in terms of, like, this team is championship caliber?
It reminds me of what Jimmy Johnson's done in the past, where, oh, he's struggling, he's had some issues, and then all of a sudden, hey, there he is in the top five again. Where did DC come from? Basically, Jimmy Johnson did that a bunch during his championship years, and now Truex is. Although, in all honesty, I'd be hard-pressed to find a season where somebody led anywhere near as many laps as Truex did in one time. So, it'd be pretty embarrassing if he didn't win it at this point.
Yeah, and I guess that's part of the new playoff system, right? Is like, you can have this dominating performance leading up to Homestead, but if you crash or blow an engine in the first 30 laps, your season's done. Zach, right?
I'd argue that the previous version was like that as well. But I'd argue this format is a bit more anticlimactic than what NASCAR had last year, and I don't think that was their intention. What do you think about that, Dustin?
Yeah, I'm anticlimactic. Yeah, it's just, I mean, I'm basing off the same format. Like, yes, it's different this year, but it's essentially the same as the past 3 years in the fact that one race determines a champion. I don't know. I know Zach and I, we've done this podcast for a couple months now, and we've gone back and forth on this a bunch of times. Like, I'm an old school person. I like the 36 race format. Just, you know, one, the best person out of the 36 races really being no playoffs. But then, you know, this is definitely has its moments. So Zach, I mean,
yeah.
Going back to this championship performance, I think it was a hell of a performance by Truex's team with everything they had to overcome.
Yeah, it was a good question for sure when it came to was this one of his better performances this year, because as you said, we've seen him go out there and just completely annihilate the field. And yeah, those are cool. You know, you got the best car, you got the clean air, you're good on restarts, your pit crew's on time. But to me, I always look at the guys who are able to come back from adversity. That's always something that I always look for in a race team, and we've seen a few guys be able to do that this year, and we haven't really seen the 78 team tested as much because they haven't made a whole lot of mistakes. But for Kansas, for sure, they had those two big ones, and as you said, you know, he was way behind, and he was still able to come through and beat all those guys, and, you know, he had the strategy right at that point. And so, yeah, I was absolutely put this and Kansas, which are two of the last few races, as two of the best performances of the year.
Yeah, and quickly, I want to transition to some of the negative news. And a lot of this, the rest of the podcast is going to be negative, unfortunately, because there's a lot of big moments on Sunday and even on Saturday in the Xfinity race. But guys, Kyle Larson, he blows an engine in the first stage. And he's got four victories this year, led over 1,000 laps. How surprised are you, Zach, that he is not, and he had a lot of bonus points or playoff points, whatever they call them. How surprised are you that he's not in the round of eight?
I'm completely shocked. I don't think we mentioned his name once in the podcast last week. Maybe someone picked him to win, but I mean, I wasn't even looking at him. He was well into the green for me, but man, that was huge heartbreak. I couldn't believe what I was watching when that smoke started coming out. He pitted. I'm like, okay, they're back on the track. Maybe he's okay. Then poof, boom, he's done. So an absolute heartbreak. And I mean, it's just one of those things that we know can happen. You know, you always know someone can wreck on the first lap and their big 29-point lead can go take the shovel, but it actually happened here. And this is his first DNF since Indianapolis, way up back in July. And just overall, this round, it was a tough round. He had two decent finishes, which, you know, put him in pretty solid position, as we said, but he really didn't have a big enough cushion to have a complete disaster run and to still be safe. So two decent finishes and a DNF just didn't cut it for him.
And Phil, it's his first engine failure since coming to Cup full time. I mean, that's a tough time to have it, Phil, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. Now, just the notion that Kyle Larson could go four dang seasons almost without an engine failure just shows where we are reliability-wise today. The idea of going even 10 races without an engine failure, say, in the late 80s, was really kind of unusual. So, I mean, it's a credit to the engineering that goes into these engines today. They can go that long without having a failure. But, yeah, it was crushing for Larson. And pretty much the only thing that could have kept him out of the round of eight kept him out.
Yeah, you said that perfectly.
This is the first time we've seen eliminations like this. I think back to Talladega, I think it was 2014, when Kyle Busch threw an enter in the race, and then he got crashed out.
Yep.
Got eliminated because of that.
Yeah. It just, I don't know. That's why, like, he's had probably, he's been the only guy that's really been able to compete for the majority of the season with Truex and Kyle Busch. And now, like, the top guy that is not a Toyota is out. So it's like, well,
yeah, this is, championship got a little bit easier for Truex and Kyle in Homestead. I'll say that.
Yeah, I think so too. And especially because Larson, you know, I think it's a disappointment for NASCAR that he's not going to be in the final four because that's his best track. You watch him like race the High Line at Homestead. That's awesome to watch because he gives it his all, even like last year and the year before. I think he led the most laps in each of the two races and ended up not winning. But I mean, Zach, would you say that? Like, I think it's a pretty big disappointment.
Oh, huge, big time. I mean, everyone wants to see one of those young drivers out racing for the championship. And as you said, he's been the next best thing behind Kyle and Martin, and we know how long they've been around. So I know when it comes to those guys who don't want to see Toyota win, it was cool to see a Chevy as competitive as Larson was. And for the sport to have a young driver up there and someone who's so, so damn good at Homestead, running that High Line, I still think he's going to be a shot to win that race.
Oh, yeah.
He's definitely going to be up there. Contending with the championship guys. Perhaps we'll have a non-championship guy win that race for the first time in quite a few years. So he's definitely still going to be up there. I don't think it's going to take too much wind out of his sails, but it took a lot of wind out of NASCAR's sails when it comes to selling this championship for this year.
Yeah, I agree. And Phil, I mean, like Zach was saying, he was sitting on the young guys, and sure, we have two of them left, but like Larson was, he was the top guy, top of those young guns this year, wouldn't you say? I mean, it's kind of, it is disappointing to see not. He's not going to have a shot at the championship.
Yeah, it does. It really does, Barry. I would have been very happy to see him. I would have been very happy to see Kyle have a chance to go at it for the 70-pound cup that they're racing for. But, it's almost that much. It's 66. But it's heavy, it's metal, and it's worth winning. And unfortunately, Kyle's not getting it this year.
Yeah. Phil, what's it do again? What is it?
Well, it's heavy, it's made of metal, it weighs 66 pounds, and it's worth racing.
But for Larson?
For Larson?
Yeah.
It just really bites that he's not going to be able to race it this year.
So,
I guarantee you this, he'll come back next year, and he's going to come back strong.
Yeah, he's going to come back with a vengeance. I mean, and rightfully so, because this is the best shot he's had at a title and the best shot Chip Ganassi's had at a title, really, in NASCAR. And sure, they're still in the hunt for the Owners' Championship in the Xfinity Series, but obviously, like you said, Phil, there's nothing like winning that heavy metal 66-pound trophy. But with that, a former champion, like that transition there, Phil, Matt Kenseth, he also missed the cut in a bit of a bizarre way. After Jimmy Johnson spun twice during the middle of the race, Eric Jones lost control of his car in a restart, and he spun around in the middle of the field, triggered like what 14-car pileup, including Kenseth. Now, when the 20 team came, when he brought the 20 car to pit road, they had seven members in the box, which working on the car. It's not allowed. It's an automatic disqualification when you're on the crash clock. Phil, how mishandled was this from Jason Ratcliffe and the 20 team?
Ratcliffe claims that he basically told his crew, six dudes over the wall. Basically, he blamed his crew guy for screwing up. And basically, the replay shows that. There was the rather heavy set dude with the sazon. Gardner falls off the wall. He's like, oh, no, I'm screwed up. Tries to get back and decides, I'm going to go over anyway. And then goes over there.
And then he worked on it.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. And after that, NASCAR was like, heck no, get out. But now, this podcast is posting to the website concurrently to Friday Face-Off. So I might be preempting myself in this because I wrote a fairly long response to this at work.
Hmm.
Long story short, I'm against the entire damaged vehicle policy in general. And this whole you get parked if you have seven over the wall thing, it's the stupidest part of it in general.
Yeah, what, Phil, what do you think the rule should be then going forward with the 5 minutes? I mean, you don't think there should be one?
I don't think so. I think you should be able to go behind the wall and repair your car and continue. I believe that the cost savings are not worth it. And in all honesty, it goes against human nature. As for this whole penalty about not having too many people over the wall, the normal rule is you can only have six.
Uh-huh.
So, and that's for a regular pit stop, unless NASCAR gives you dispensation to send over number seven to take care of the driver.
Right, like tearing the windshield cover off or whatever, the tear-off.
Yes, that's what Jimmy Johnson's team did.
Right.
And they had special dispensation to do that. Usually that's sort of an overarching thing, though. I'm pretty sure it wasn't just Johnson's team.
Yeah.
But...
yeah, so, Zach, we'll hit on you now. How disappointing is this for Kenseth, who really had nothing to do with this? He was just coming in hoping to get his car fixed, and then NASCAR's like, you're done.
Yeah, that's one of the disappointing things, and I kind of gelled out with Lawson because it had nothing to do with him either. But, yeah, with Kenseth, you know, it definitely came down to what Jason did there. I mean, he just let it slip. I mean, I certainly believe the penalty was too severe for sure. I don't think somebody should be fucked for one more person, but it's a rule. It's a very simple, simple rule. And, I mean, if Tom Bowles were to tell me, Zach, your next article, write 500 words. Don't go over 500 words. If you write more than 500 words, I'm taking your laptop and you're off the site for a day. I'm not writing over 500 words. I'm probably going to write 450 just to be safe. And we've seen in this team, we've seen them make small mistakes like this. And we saw them a couple of years ago. It was like a sticker on the car in 2014 at Charlotte. They got sent to the rear of the field. Kenseth got black flagged, and his team never really told him until they were almost not scoring his car. So they seem to make these small errors like this, and it was such a massive blow for Kenseth. I know he was disappointed to be out of it, you know, not even being able to race for it, and a lot of confusion. But, man, this all goes on to Jason Ratcliffe. It's such a simple rule, and he just let it slip, just not paying attention.
Yeah, I agree. And when you look at the outpour on Twitter, like fans were complaining, like, oh, you know, like, why is he being parked? Well, a rule is a rule, and it's been a rule the whole year. And as much as, like Phyllis said, that we might not agree with the rule, it's still a rule. And,
yeah.
And, I mean, the thing that sucks for Kenseth is, like, he's out of the 20 next year. There's no ifs or buts about that. He's out. And I mean, this could have been his last good shot at a championship. It could have been his last shot at a championship, period.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's tough to watch something like that happen and transpire when the driver, you know, has nothing to do with it. It was just a mental error or something by Ratcliffe. And I didn't hear the Sirius XM interview. Phil, did you? You kind of hit on that.
I did not. Okay. But, I think I saw it on Twitter where basically Ratcliffe's opinion was he told his crew that only six would go over, and I think crew guys based on it.
Yeah.
I mean, in all honesty, this probably should be a one-lap penalty.
Yeah, I don't see the reason of, you know, parking a driver for having another crew member over the wall just trying to – they say it's a safety concern or whatever, but – I don't know. I think that's too harsh of a penalty. Like, there was still, what, like 90 laps to go or whatever. That's just an estimation off the top of my head, but...
68, I think.
Okay, 68 laps to go or whatever. That's hard to take. That's like, you know, you're taking one on the chin there. But it is a rule. So, moving forward, I guess you live and you learn. And while living and learning, guys, we still have two of the younger Chase, the playoff drivers in the playoffs. We got Chase Elliott and Ryan Blaney, who both made it to the round eight. Phil, out of those two or the other six drivers, I would guess it's one of these two, who are you most surprised about making it this far in the playoffs?
Ryan Blaney.
Same.
And here's why. In all honesty, he's by far the worst in points of anybody that's actually still active. If you see our newsletters on Monday, I keep track of points using the other system, both the current system if we didn't have a playoff, and even last year's points. Without a playoff. I believe he would be 11th in points if we using the current system, if we didn't have playoffs. And if we use last year's points, he would have just gotten into the top 16 after Sunday. he's quite a ways behind most everyone else that's left, with the possible exception of Johnson.
Yeah. Zach, and when you look at Kansas this year, though, like, yes, he started the back on Sunday because of a tech inspection post-tech on qualifying, but he finished third in this past Sunday, which was his first top five since winning at Pocono in early June. But then at the first Kansas race, he won the pole and then finished fourth while leading 83 laps. I mean, to me, he's my biggest surprise as well. What about you?
Yeah, Blaney is definitely really high. We've seen him really struggle over the summer, and as you said, he didn't have a top five since Pocono before this day. And going into Kansas, I had him not advancing. I really didn't see it happening. And when he started in the back, I'm like, yeah, he's done, man. But he ended up coming back. I mean, that was probably the best race he's had, I would say, all season, right up there with Pocono. I mean, that was a really, really impressive run to see him come from the back, be smart, end up getting a lot of stage points and getting a top five finish again. So he was a surprise. I didn't expect him in the top eight. And then Jimmy Johnson also as well. I had him missing the round of eight. And I'll be interested to see what both of those guys can do this round. A few of these tracks are good. We saw them both do great at Texas last time. So who knows, man? They can possibly get into the top four. We're going to see a couple surprises in there, and maybe it'll be them too.
Phil, do you think that Blaney can make it to the final four? Like Zach said, he did run well at Texas and won the first two stages, but then Phoenix earlier this year, he finished 23rd, and at Martinsville, he finished 25th. I mean, those numbers aren't getting you in, unless you win Texas.
Yeah, winning Texas will, obviously, if he were to do that, yeah, he'd get in that way. But he's got to bring his A game. I'm going to reference Race Hub right now. As you know, Dale Walsh Jr. got his ride with Petty for next year. But during the interview on the show, he mentioned that Ryan Blaney wasn't the biggest fan of Martinsville, especially early in his career. He hated that place when he was 14. I sure hope he's changed his mentality about racing there, because that ain't going to work. But Texas is probably going to be his place to make hay. Phoenix is Phoenix. Let's see. Well, his track record there isn't bad. Yeah, he finished 23rd this year in the spring. He started on the outside pole in that race. His other two runs there are top tens. If he can equal what he did there last year, eighth, combine that with a good run at Texas and improve in Martinsville, he's got a chance. Winning in Texas would be best.
Yeah, for sure. I agree with you. And with that, I want to move to the Xfinity Series, because a lot happened in the Xfinity Series this past weekend that might have went under the radar a little bit. I know on our site it didn't. We had two columns on it last night, but if you missed, you're living under a rock this past weekend. Erik Jones dominated the race at the Xfinity race at Kansas, leading 186 of 200 laps. But with four laps to go, Christopher Bell made a dive bomb going down into turn three and came up on the right side of it, putting himself and Jones kind of in the wall. Phil, what's your take on that? Fair or foul?
Well, all's fair in a late race battle like this. Christopher Bell's trying to put his name on the map, well, more than it already is, and he did this. This is not the first time we've seen stuff like this. I seem to remember Carl Edwards doing something similar and missing.
Same corner.
It was in 08. And, he tried his darnest, but he couldn't quite pull it off. He just put himself on the wall and had to settle for second. This is the flip side of that. Getting it done, and yeah, he put his car on the wall, and it went back down there in the process. But he got the job done, and he waltzed off with the trophy.
Exactly.
And as far as I know, fans are cool with something like this. This isn't intentionally wrecking something. We've seen what intentional wrecking is. This was hard racing, and it's going to go down as a bit controversial, but it's hard racing. This is okay.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, Phil. Yeah, I mean, what does he really have to lose? And, I mean, both the drivers, really. It was Jones has won two races earlier this year. He's in the Cup Series. And then Bell was just his fifth career race. So, I mean, what's there to lose, you know? Zach, what do you think? Fair or foul?
I think it's very fair. You know me. I love seeing hard racing for the win. And we know when it comes to over-under moves and slide job moves, it takes two guys to make it work. If that second guy doesn't want you to make that pass, he's going to do whatever he can to make it hard for you. But I mean, I love seeing guys race hard for the win. That's something that makes Chris Bell really, really special, is that he's got that dirt racing mentality to him. And Eric Jones had a cool little snippet after the race: this ain't dirt racing.
Yeah.
And yeah, that might be true, but I mean, Chris Bell is the one who won the race, and I know Eric Jones, he's not an aggressive racer. He doesn't really, really push it. We've seen him give up a lot of wins this year, and I mean, he lost because he wasn't aggressive enough, and we've seen him lose a lot this year. He could certainly have, you know, a Cup win or so if he was just more aggressive. So I love that type of racing, from especially from young drivers. So I definitely get excited when I see that.
Yeah,
fair game for me.
I definitely agree it's fair, but I think Bell's going to pass him regardless. I mean, it's fine that he did it, and it, you know, made for some good controversy between teammates, but he was 2.5 seconds back with 10 laps to go. And then that was coming with 4 to go. So in 6 laps, he made up 2.5 seconds. He was going to pass him regardless. I guess pass him or catch him is one thing, pass him another. But Zach, with that and Bell going to the Xfinity Series next year full time, it might have been a good move at the time, but was it a smart move in the grand scheme of things?
Oh, yeah, for sure. With young drivers, they're going to think of the now. He wanted that win, and that's all he was thinking on. And I kind of like that about race car drivers. They're going for the trophy at the end of the day. That's all they really care about. I mean, what happens past this point? We know a lot of drivers, they usually get over some stuff, but a few of them usually don't. And it's going to be interesting to see two young guys have such an early contact with each other like this. And they both came up, you know, pretty similarly with Kyle Busch and everything, but you know, now they're going to be going down possibly different paths this upcoming season. So it's going to be really fascinating. They're going to both be tested on how this is going to affect the season next year.
Phil, what's your take on that?
On basically, wait, on the dive bomb and the whole move and how it's going there.
Was it a smart move in the grand scheme of things, because he's going there and he's going to be working with Jones next year essentially full time?
I agree with that notion about being careful about that. This would be different if they were on different teams. They were on different teams, he'd have to worry about Eric Jones paying them back. That's not really... that would be really frowned upon if that happened here. I mean, we could only imagine what the meetings at the shop would be like.
Don't go speculating, Phil.
If that would happen, you seen any of the battles in F1 between Esteban Ocon and Checo Perez this year?
Those haven't been pretty, yeah.
Well, Phil, you wanted to bring up something about sports cars, so go ahead. This is your time to shine.
Anyway, today, United Auto Sports announced that Fernando Alonso is going to race in the Rolex 24 in January. And this is just the latest announcement in what's going to be an absolutely spectacular Rolex 24. I don't know right now how many cars are going to be there. Right now, 1, 2, 4, 8, 12, 14. We have at least 17 or so prototypes that are going to be in the field. With stacked lineups, you got Penske with their 2 full-time cars. Or you got former Formula One drivers at Action Express. I hear you guys laughing there, but Action Express signed Felipe Nasser.
Typically a NASCAR podcast, but Phil's our sports car guy, so Phil, go ahead, keep going.
I'll be right honest. We will be at the Rolex 24 for our 6th year of coverage down there, and it will be an absolutely exquisite time. I cannot wait.
No, oh, I'm sure. Oh. It's a lot of fun. A month before the Daytona 500 every year, so... Phil, yeah, I'm sure you'll have a good time there. And you also mentioned up earlier in the podcast that Darrell Wallace Jr. this week announced that he's going to be in the 43 car next year full-time for Richard Petty Motorsports. Phil, that's a pretty big deal, isn't it? You got an African-American in the Cup Series full-time for the first time in a long time.
Yes. It's the first time in the modern era of NASCAR. The last time we had an African-American racer racing... the vast majority of the schedule was 1971 with Wendell Scott. At that time, we're talking pre-modern NASCAR when they were racing multiple times a week. And up to that point, it was impossible to run every race because of the what's now the Can-Am duels actually being points races. So you can't actually run it. But I hope the best for Darrell Wallace Jr. By all means, he did pretty well in the 4 races he did this year in the 43. If he can avoid the anger feints or anything like that. And I hear you laughing in the background there, Dustin. That's basically how Darrell described it. When he gets really upset with himself, he just loses control of himself.
Yeah, and
that's what happened on pit road after the race in Pocono.
Yeah, that, and then I also witnessed it in Dover earlier this year, the first in the spring. He had a chance to win that race. He won stage 2, and then he got caught in traffic after not pitting late in the stage to take the stage win, and then he couldn't get back to the front. I think he finished in the back half of the top 10. But yeah, like you said, Phil, he had an average finish of 17.8 in the 4 races, filling in for Eric Almirola, with a best finish of 11th at Kentucky, which is his most recent outing. Zach, what do you think? I think this is definitely a good step in the right direction for Bubba.
Oh, yeah, and for the team. I mean, they definitely need a young driver who's coming up the ranks. And as you said about Bubba's results today, you know, they were better than what Eric's been doing this year on average since he came back from his injury. So I know for the sport, it's a big positive to have an African-American driver back on the full-time grid. I think they posted a photo of, it was like Suarez, Chase Elliott, Ryan Blaney, Bubba, and a couple others, and now they're all together full-time in Cup, and, you know, they're all there, and Bubba's been asked, you know, every question this week on what it's going to be like in the Cup Series full-time, and as you said about his temper, you know, can sometimes get the best of him. He's definitely going to have to tame that. There's going to be a lot of tough moments this upcoming season. We know that 43 just hasn't been shown the potential that I think it should have the last few years. So he's going to have some tough moments, but for the most part, I think he's going to be a really appreciative young man, and it's going to be really cool to see another youngster in the Cup Series as a rookie alongside William Byron.
And Phil, we're going to transition now into race picks for this weekend for the Truck Series and Cup race, unless you got anything else you want to add.
First off, a quick note on that picture NASCAR posted. That was cropped. Dylan Kwasniewski was in that picture as well. But, well, you know he's not in Cup these days.
Yeah, he's not even in the sport.
Yeah, last I heard he was selling real estate. Huh. Which seems really weird since he's really young for that.
Yeah, he's younger than... Yeah, he's very young. Phil, we're going to go to picks now. Who do you got for the truck race and then the cup race this weekend at Martinsville?
truck race, I'm going to go with Johnny Sauter.
Jeez.
And for cup, there's a couple of obvious names out there. I want to go with Earnhardt Jr.
Oh, wow.
Obviously, he's not an obvious name out here, but he won this race in 2014. And holy Christ, this place, the house would come down if he actually won under the lights there, because we know damn.
They'd burn the place down, Phil.
It'll get really quick, really quick.
And Zach, you're going to be there, so that'd be quite the experience. I know you're there for Gordon's last win in 15. So who do you got this weekend in both the series?
Yeah, Martinsville just brings that specialty that you look for every week. And yeah, I know that would be cool, but yeah, I can't pick Dale to win, unfortunately. It's going to be a good shot for him. With Talladega in the past, you know, this is a good race. And he hasn't been turning it around. He's got 3 7th places in the last 4 races. So, you know, he's coming on here at the end, but I don't know if he has the winning speed. I did pick Johnny Sauter to win the trucks, but I guess I'll pick someone else. I'll probably go with Matt Crafton. Yeah.
Jeez, you guys took both my picks for trucks. I was going to pick Sauter, and then I'm like, oh, I'll go Crafton.
I love going first, that's why. But, yeah, when I think of the short tracks in the truck series, I think about the more experienced guys, especially Martinsville. Sauter and Crafton are just, you know, dynamic there. So I got, you know, Mr. Crafton for the trucks, and then Kyle Busch for Cup. You know, he did amazing in this race last year, won the race in dominating fashion and had a terrific battle with Brad. I was shooting by the fence, them going by, you know, they kept it clean, but they were so close racing for the win. So if Brad's not going to get it, I'm going to say Kyle Busch is going to get back to victory lane.
Yeah, and for cup or for the truck race, I'll go, since you guys took both my picks, I will go Christopher Bell, because why not? He's had one hell of a year. I think he'll march right into Homestead with this win. For cup, yeah, I mean, if you look at, like, a lot of the guys that used to run very well here, like your Jeff Gordons and, you know, your Tony Stewarts, even Earnhardt we could throw in there, they kind of faded out or not in the race anymore. So you kind of got a new crop of guys, and I mean, besides, like, Jimmy Johnson and Denny Hamlin, who've also dominated there. And then recently you've got, like, Brad Keselowski, who won earlier this year, Kyle Busch won last year, Joey Logano's ran well there. You guys picked Earnhardt and Kyle. I'm going to go Hamlin. I think Hamlin will go to Homestead regardless. Mm-hmm. I think this is how he'll get there. I think he'll win at Martinsville this weekend. Yeah, so with that, guys, Phil, it was fun having you on this week. When's the last time you were on, Phil? You remember?
Oh, geez. It was before Matt left. So I think I've only done one this year.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so it was nice having you. You brought some entertainment for sure.
Phil.
Yeah, just thanks for having you, Phil. It was nice having you, and you're welcome to join back anytime that we need you. Zach, anything else last minute to say before heading off to Martinsville tomorrow?
Oh, I love Martinsville. I'm so happy right now. I cannot wait to get there. It's going to be a terrific weekend. As I said, you go in there, you just feel different. It's just one of those places that you love working at, and you love shooting at, reporting at, and just watching a race. So I know I'm going to have a lot of fun. I'm going to have some help with Mr. Mike Neff. We're going to see how many hot dogs he can eat this
Get
weekend.
Get pictures of that.
Yeah. Me and Dustin were texting. I'm like, he literally walks in with bags. He does have bags of hot dogs. So yeah, I'll try to get pictures, and I'll try to keep count if I have enough paper and pen for it.
Yeah, you guys should keep track of the fun
stuff. They do put the hot dogs in, like, aluminum foil down there, so you can easily carry it. They brought hot dogs to Daytona in the past.
I remember they brought them this year. Yeah, well, with that, hopefully it's a nice weekend in Martinsville. Hopefully the weather stays away. Zach, have a lot of fun. And until next week, while we review Martinsville and preview Texas, we'll catch you around.